You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, the Republicans finally did it. I got to tell you about this. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Yes, the Republicans did it. They finally, after all these years, they found someone who's committed voter fraud. You know, they've been scouring the planet, well, the country, looking for someone who would commit voter fraud, partisan voter fraud. Now, everybody knows that every year there's maybe 15, 20, 30 people who commit just good old fashioned nonpartisan voting fraud. That is, they vote from typically it's people who are ex-felons who didn't realize that the state that they live in doesn't allow ex-felons to vote. That's the most common form. But, you know, occasionally somebody who otherwise isn't eligible to vote, only lives part-time in the state, whatever. But this was somebody, this was partisan voter fraud. That is to say, this is a person who voted in a state specifically to help flip an election illegally. The Republicans, in their quest to find someone, anyone, who's committed voter fraud to justify these new radical voter ID laws that have now knocked 5 million voters off the rolls in 17 states just in the last year, the Republicans have finally found their culprit. Taking a heck of a lot of work to finally find a real voter fraud criminal. Even George W. Bush couldn't find the voter fraudsters. He had a 5-year investigation going through the Department of Justice. Ended up at, you know, 7 of his federal prosecutors said, hey, I got more important things to do than this. He was trying to find out how rampant voter fraud is, spent millions and millions of dollars, 5 years, couldn't find it. You know, if he had found one person, everybody would know their name. Oh, yeah, the Willie Horton of voter fraud. Couldn't find one. In fact, the number of people struck by lightning and the number of UFO sightings during that same period of time were massively larger than the number of voter fraud cases uncovered by the Department of Justice. The Brennan Center for Justice did a detailed study between 2000 and 2006 in several states to find the rate of voter fraud. Here's what they found. In Wisconsin, the voter fraud rate was 0.0002%. In New York, the voter fraud rate was 0.0000009%. That's nine hundred thousandths of one. These are minuscule. In New Jersey, the rate was 0.0004%. In New Hampshire, 0.0006. Basically, maybe in each of these states, one or two people. And in Missouri, it was just 0.001%. In other words, voter fraud pretty much doesn't exist. It does definitely doesn't exist in a degree to warrant voter ID laws that will kick millions of poor, elderly, and urban voters off the voting rolls this election. As ProtectingTheVote.com uncovered, 18% of young Americans, people who tend to vote for Democrats, 18% don't now, under these new laws, don't have appropriate government-issued IDs to vote. 25% of African Americans, again, people who tend to vote for Democrats, also don't have the appropriate government-issued IDs to vote in states with these new voter ID laws. So if the Republicans could just find one person, just one high-profile name to repeat over and over and over again, like they did with Willie Horton to the American people, convincing them the voter fraud is a real... I mean, Willie Horton was about voter fraud, he was about murder, but same thing. You know, the voter fraud is a real problem. These laws are necessary. Everything else could fall into place. Then they would have a justification for laws that require super tight ID, and they could send people to jail for years and years if they committed voter fraud. So, luckily for the Republicans, they found their guy. They found a fraudulent voter, a vote fraudster. Let me tell you about the suspect. In 2010, this suspect allegedly cast a fraudulent vote in the Massachusetts Senate race. The suspect bragged that he voted illegally in that state just so he could help the candidate he supported fill Ted Kennedy's vacant Senate seat. Now, to be eligible to vote, the suspect claimed that his legal residence was in Massachusetts. Believe it or not, this guy actually wrote on the voter registration forms that he lived in his son's unfinished basement. According to Massachusetts law, for a location to be the primary residence for a voter, it has to be, quoting Massachusetts law, quote, where a person dwells and which is the center of this domestic, social, and civic life, end quote. However, according to this suspect's former realtor, The suspect didn't live in his son's unfinished basement. In fact, he had actually moved to California long before the election. This means that the suspect illegally claimed a false residence just so he could illegally vote in that Senate race. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is textbook partisan voter fraud. Committing voter fraud in Massachusetts carries with it a $10,000 fine and 5 years in prison. So who is it? Who is this man who committed this crime in Massachusetts in 2010? Is he a member of ACORN? Maybe he's a member of the new Black Panther Party or a Democratic Party operative. You know, I guess it really doesn't matter to Republicans who it is, because they now have what they need to claim that voter fraud is rampant and voter ID laws are necessary. So all is good in the Republican Party tonight. The only thing that could screw this up for them is that if the suspect somehow was a prominent figure within the Republican Party. Oops. Yeah. Our voter fraud suspect is none other than Mitt Romney, the Republican Party's nominee for president. Where's Joe Arpaio when you need him? This is incredible. The government, by the way, okay, so we'll see how this plays out, right? I think it's probably pretty unlikely Mitt Romney's going to be prosecuted for voter fraud. But voting fraudulently, I mean, these people spend all this time trying to figure out if Barack Obama was born in the United States, you know, nearly 50 years ago. What about somebody who was bragging about voting fraudulently just a couple of years ago? We'll see. We'll see where this goes. A lot of interesting things going on. Generally speaking, here the BP oil spill. I don't know. Have you seen this story? This is just incredible. Evolution. The way evolution works is that it typically works through what's called bottleneck events. This was Stephen Jay Gould's contribution to Darwin's theory. Stephen Jay Gould, the deceased Harvard scientist, I believe he was professor of biology, and he suggested that rather than evolution going slowly and gradually, that what happened were what are called bottleneck events, mass die-offs of populations, where the only members of that population who survived were the ones who carried a particular mutation that gave them the ability to survive, and so they then had offspring, and now you've got a change in the species. Or species, I guess is the singular. In any case, the biggest example that we're starting to see now is eyeless shrimp down in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, the eyes are very sensitive, and there were all these chemicals. I mean, 200 million gallons of oil dumped into the Gulf of Mexico and tens of millions of gallons of dispersant chemicals, which are mutagenic, carcinogenic, but they cause mutations. But also, they're highly corrosive, the oil and the chemicals. So one of the big things that the shrimpers are now pulling out of the Gulf of Mexico, because now we're like 2-3 generations of shrimp down the road, because this is the second anniversary coming up here. But in that period of time, you can have 2 or 3 generations of shrimp. So it's time to actually observe evolution happening. Apparently, those shrimp with eyes couldn't survive. Their eyes got burned out. Or burned away, and thus they died off. But there must have been some mutant shrimp who didn't have eyes. They lacked the gene for eyes, or it got knocked out somehow. And they're reproducing like crazy because they can live in an environment that's hostile to eyeballs. And so the shrimpers down in the Gulf of Mexico are pulling up hundreds of pounds of eyeless shrimp. Tell me Mother Nature isn't kicking back, saying, don't think that drill baby drill idea was such a good idea.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Of course, Sarah Palin has a slightly different perspective on this. I'll share it with you right after this. So keep on rocking me, baby. Yeah, well, speaking of rockers, Ted Nugent is being interviewed by the Secret Service today, if news reports are accurate. And Ted had a few things to say that kind of perked their ears up. Here's the first one.
Get everybody you know to get involved and engage, because it isn't the enemy that ruined America. It's good people who bent over and let the enemy in. If the coyote's in your living room on your couch, it's not the coyote's fault. It's your fault for not shooting him.
Right. Your fault for not shooting him. And then he talked about chopping off their heads.
If you take that adamant we the people defiance, remember we're Americans because we defied the king. We didn't negotiate and compromise with the king. We defied the emperors. We are patriots. We are braveheart. We need to ride into that battlefield and chop their heads off in November. Any questions?
Now, somebody ought to explain to Ted that in 1776, we were occupied, this continent, at least, you know, from the point of view of white Anglo-Saxons, by and large, we were occupied by a foreign country. Well, from the point of view of Native Americans, too, they were occupied as well, but they weren't the ones who revolted. But we were occupied by Great Britain, and we overthrew an occupier. We created our own government, and it's, you know, we the people. So are you saying that we should overthrow our own government? Because to the best of my knowledge, Canada is not occupying us. Great Britain doesn't occupy us. You know, Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, fill in the blank, none of them occupy us. Whose head are you going to chop off? Well, apparently Ted feels so passionate about this that he thinks that a year from now, if Obama gets reelected, he's either going to be in jail or be dead. This is the kind of talk that you hear out of, you know, this is Ted Kaczynski kind of talk, right? This is crazy talk. Well, Ted Kaczynski had these long screeds. So, but here's Ted Nugent.
If Barack Obama becomes the president in November again, I will either be dead or in jail by this time next year.
Yeah. So, like I said, somebody needs to tell Ted that this government is our government. It's yours too, Ted. And yes, of course, we need to get, you know, people mobilized and active, whether they're on your side or on my side or whatever, you know, figure out the side. I mean, whatever. It's all good to get people active and engaged in the political process, but to call the other side an enemy and talk about shooting them and cutting off their heads and put it in the context of revolutions against governments, this is stuff that, you know, got David Koresh in some trouble. Mitt Romney thinks Ted Nugent's just kind of a cool guy. Here he is on the Mark Reardon Show.
Ted Nugent, he said he had a great conversation with you, and if Ted says you're okay, he endorsed you, I'm pretty tempted to do the same thing.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, it's been fun getting to know him and Ted Nugent.
Yeah, good guy. Yeah, really good guy. And then it gets even more bizarre. Brian Fisher's been on this program a number of times, and he has now got this new shtick. Brian, you know, conservative, Christian, fundamentalist, America was a Christian nation, blah, 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 all that stuff. And badly misreading the Bible. I will share with you the Book of Mark, chapter 10, verse 45. In the King James Version, it reads, "For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister." Right? In other words, he came not to get, but to give, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Okay, that's the King James Version. The American Standard Version, "For the Son of Man came not to," they administered as well. There's another version. Maybe this is it. Yeah, they all say ministered to. But anyhow, here's what Brian had to say.
Secret of capitalism is Mark 10:45. Jesus said the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom. The only way you can succeed in capitalism is by serving people. If you don't identify some need that they have and find some effective way to satisfy that need, you ain't going anywhere in capitalism. That's the beauty of capitalism. It is built on the teaching of Jesus himself. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve.
Right. And therefore, you know, when the CEO of a health insurance company makes $1 billion, that's Christian. Jesus would have loved that. It's really quite remarkable. It's really quite remarkable. And in fact, Bishop Jenke, these guys, they're all doubling down on this stuff. This is clip number 8, Jacob. This is crazy talk.
For 2,000 years, the enemies of Christ have certainly tried their best. And in the power of the resurrection, the church will survive the hatred of Hollywood, the malice of the media, the entrenched corruption and sheer incompetence of our Illinois state government, and even the calculated disdain of the President of the United States, his bureaucrats and HHS, and the majority in today's federal Senate.
Yeah. This is just absolutely. Oh, and I mentioned Sarah Palin had some things to say about. I mentioned the shrimp before. Here's Sarah.
That's the difference between you and Eric's position and the president's. It gets down to drilling, doesn't it?
It's not just drilling, though, Bob. Unleashing domestic energy production, aka drill baby drill and frack baby frack, and allow pipelines to be built. All of that's very important.
Yeah, we need more of that oil stuff. You know, it makes the air warmer and it makes the air more poisonous for our children. And, it makes the oil billionaires like the Koch brothers even more billions. And ExxonMobil, it makes them richer. And British Petroleum. And, hey, it makes for shrimp without eyeballs. That's kind of cool. Poor Sarah. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We really need kind of science 101, I think, for Republicans. You think it'll ever happen? Your calls after this. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, what have we been through here? Mitt Romney looks like he is guilty of voter fraud. Partisan voter fraud, saying that he lived in his son's unfinished basement in Massachusetts so he could vote to try to give Scott Brown Ted Kennedy's old seat and bragging about it. We got Ted Nugent going off on how we need to have something. I don't know, comparing Barack Obama and our current government with a foreign occupying force. And Mitt Romney saying, oh, he's a great guy, Ted Nugent, yeah. Jesus said that capitalism is a good thing, according to Brian Fisher. Sarah Palin, frack baby frack while we're having shrimp in the Gulf that are blacking their eyeballs. The Republicans in the House of Representatives are the Senate. I think this fight has been lost, but in the House of Representatives, they're trying to undo what has been a law for a number of years now, the Violence Against Women Act. And they're trying to say, well, it's okay to have violence against some women. It's okay to have violence against women who are illegal aliens, who are immigrants without documentation. That's okay. So they want to exclude certain groups of women from the protection of the Violence Against Women Act. Really slick. I mean, these rocket scientists in the Republican Party, I just don't get it. Roy in Fraser, Michigan. Hey, Roy, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and Ted Nugent, I don't know if you've heard the story, how he avoided the draft here in Michigan.
No, I had to, this morning, this is how out of touch I am with pop culture, I guess. I asked Paul, who is Ted Nugent again? I mean, I've seen his name a million times, and I know that he's kind of a star for being a star, but I couldn't recognize any of his music, or maybe I would, and I just didn't know that it was him. But in any case,
right. Continue
with your story.
Yeah. Anyway, about 10 years ago, he gave an interview to the Detroit Free Press, and he detailed what he did when he received his draft notice for Vietnam.
Right.
He decided to keep his Levi's on for 30 days. He did not remove his clothes. He didn't take a bath. He didn't shower or anything, and he didn't go to the bathroom. He kept his Levi's on. Defecated on himself, urinated on himself, and then after 30 days, he went to the draft board. This is Ted Nugent saying this.
Whoa.
And the draft board said, you're crazy, you're nuts, get out of here. We're not, we don't want to see you.
Whoa.
They gave him a section 1A or 1H.
4F is what they 4F. Make you, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So this is the super patriot. That's down there in Texas talking to the NRA and telling them, he's Braveheart.
That's...
This guy is the biggest coward I've ever seen in my life.
That's amazing. Well, I can't vouch for the veracity of the statement that you're making, but I'm guessing somebody in the chat room will set me up straight if that is not the case. But thanks, Roy, for sharing that with us, and thanks for listening to WDTW there in Detroit. Greg in Troy, Michigan. Hey, Greg, what's up? Boy, we're getting a lot of Ted Nugent calls out of Michigan. He's a Michigan guy.
Yeah, he is a Michigan guy.
Yeah, okay. So what's up, Greg?
I just listened to your previous caller, and he is correct on that. He did actually admit that himself.
Wow.
But, I mean, I don't want to rehash that.
Sure.
The guy's obviously a phony, and the total and complete stupidity of what he is saying, I hope that the people that support that, and I don't expect the people in his audience there to support it, but, what he's advocating is, he calls himself an American and a patriot, but what he's advocating is, let's just do away with elections, I guess. If you don't like the guy that was duly elected, that means it's open season, I guess. Now,
In Ted Nugent's defense, he said that we have to chop off their heads in November. So,
it's a veiled threat.
I don't think so. I think it was hyperbolic language. I think he was over the top. He said things he shouldn't have said. He was using metaphors that he thought were really cool, but I don't genuinely believe that he was calling for violence. The problem is that I'm a rational person. You're a rational person. There are some people out there listening to Ted Nugent who are not rational people,
exactly.
And they may not think of it in the same terms that we do. That's why you try to regulate your conversation and your behavior, particularly if you're in a public forum, in ways that can't be, really taken to extremes like that.
I agree. And Romney should, but he has no character and no backbone.
Yeah, he should repudiate this guy.
Exactly. Repudiate, condemn, and distance himself, and he should run away from this guy. He should repudiate him, but he doesn't have the guts or the backbone to do that. And that alone should be enough for these people. I don't care how much you hate Obama. That should be enough to stop you from voting for this phony that's out there. But I guess they don't want to listen.
Yeah, there you go. Greg, thanks a lot for the call. Here's clip number four. This is Mitt Romney, this phony out there, on the Mark Reardon Show talking about Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent, he said he had a great conversation with you, and if Ted says you're okay, he endorsed you, I'm pretty tempted to do the same thing.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, it's been fun getting to know him and Ted Nugent.
Yeah. Dave in Detroit. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, I was just sitting here listening to the comments about Ted Nugent's rant, and my thought is I'm a gun owner, and I enjoy hunting, but I don't have his attitude. But anyway, now might be the time to contact the NRA and find out what their stance would be, since he's a big proponent, and if they're not going to renounce what he did, I would pressure them to say, why don't you send his membership feedback and toss him out of the
group? Wayne LaPierre, who's, the head of the NRA, is not all that different when it comes to wild and inflammatory language. I mean,
I understand that, but, I mean, if you get a lot of people calling in, especially if there are sane people that are members of the NRA, if they get pressure from within, at least they'll know people think this guy's part of the lunatic fringe. And they're not going to get away with letting this clown do what he wants to do without consequence.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. I'm not opposed to Ted Nugent being able to say whatever he wants to say. I do think that it is important to say that when you're using metaphors that involve killing people, that involve shooting people, that involve cutting people's heads off, and you're explicitly and specifically talking about the President of the United States, it's probably not a good idea. Especially to do it in a public venue. But I'd say, generally pretty much in any venue, because you never know. You might be in the middle of an FBI sting operation. That's incredible. Ted in Highland, Indiana, listening to WCPT. Hey, Ted, what's up?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Nugent like these other fellas. I think you're great, Tom. Excuse me. I was in the NRA when I was a kid in 1949, and at that time they were trying to teach younger people good gun rules and what have you.
Yeah, I joined the NRA for a couple of years because I wanted to take a gun safety course.
Yeah, and it was a nice organization, but my God, like these other vets, I'm a vet too, and I. And this guy never, he was never in nothing. And they take him as a spokesman, for National Rifle Association. And I think that's terrible because the guy is, the guy never suffered any mortar attacks. He never got in a firefight or anything like that. And he's talking about killing people. You don't hear veterans talking like that.
Yeah. I think generally you don't hear Americans talking like that, particularly about American politicians or about American politics. You know, this use of, and thank you for the call, Ted. Well said. This use of war metaphor and violent metaphor is just, you know, it's not good. It's not healthy. It's over the top. Judy in Issaquah, Washington. Hey, Judy, what's up?
Tom, the last couple of days, you've asked why Romney isn't showing us his past income tax statements. And I don't have any special knowledge. So this is just pure speculation. Maybe he doesn't want the Mormon church hierarchy to know what his total income has been.
Because maybe he's not been tithing?
Because the church thinks he's been tithing like a good Mormon. And
oh,
he hasn't
my.
Been.
Yeah, and apparently that's a big deal. Judy, thank you for the call on that. And apropos of that, this was an amazing story. There's a lawsuit right now by David Edwards writing over at Raw Story. You can read it yourself. The headline, the lawsuit, former Bain executives, Bain Financial, the company that Mitt Romney helped start and ran, former Bain execs fired employees for not being Mormon. Former executives from Bain Capital, a company founded by presumptive Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney, have been accused of firing 6 out of 7 members of a management team for not belonging to the Mormon Church. So is it possible, Judy's right, that the reason that you know, I mean, what is the secret that Mitt Romney's hiding? Right? Why is it that he will not share his tax returns for more than just 1 year or maybe 2? When his dad came out and said, well, here's 8 or 10 years, one or the other, something like that. Here's a whole bunch. There's lots of years of my tax return. You know, I don't think Obama's going to care what's in it. You know, he had student loans up until he was in the Senate. So it's like, oh, what are the secrets in the tax returns? Well, could it be that the secret is that you haven't been tithing to the Mormon Church when you ran a company that is alleged in this lawsuit to fire 6 out of 7, quote, firing 6 out of 7 members of a management team for not belonging to the Mormon Church? It's going to be an interesting election, you know? It's going to be a really interesting election. We'll be right back. 45 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
866-987-THOM, our telephone number, 45 minutes past the hour. What do you need to have revolutionary change in America?
I'm going to run back to your side.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Madison in Stony Brook, New York. Hey, Madison, what's up?
How are you, Mr. Hartman? I love listening to your show.
Thank you. I
was just wanting to bring up a point. Could this be Mr. Romney's Jeremiah Wright moment?
Oh, that's interesting. Now,
because this is beyond the pale. Beyond the pale.
Yeah. As I was saying a few minutes ago, I think that the question isn't, you know, did Ted Nugent say something that's legal or illegal or politically correct or incorrect? It's, is this kind of rhetoric actually destructive to the American political process and therefore destructive to us as a nation?
It is.
And, yeah, I think so, too. And I will defend to the end his right to say it, but I will also defend my right to call it stupid and unproductive.
And there are consequences, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, we shall see. If he walks this back and, you know, what comes out of this. Madison, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. Tony in Orlando. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Tom, how are you? Thank you. Good.
Good.
Hey, Tom, listen, what's disturbing is the clip number 3.
Yeah.
The thing about the heads off and everything, that's a metaphor, I don't care. What the Secret Service is going to look at is when he said that by this time this year, if our president is reelected, he will either be in jail or dead.
Yeah, this is David Koresh kind of talk. You know, this is Jim Jones kind of talk.
But that's the crazy thing is he's going to be in jail if he attempts to kill our president, they catch him, or he's going to be dead if they shoot him first before he tries to attempt to kill our president.
Well, hopefully that's not what he meant, but that's the question that the Secret Service wants to know, I'm assuming. Is that what you meant? Because, you know, that's the kind of Ted Kaczynski, you know, the Unabomber. That's that kind of rant. You know, it's the David Koresh kind of rant. It's the Jim Jones kind of rant of, you know, they're going to come and get me. I'll be dead, or I will go down. I will die fighting. You know, that kind of language is like, you know, really, really scary stuff. I mean, it's really.
I'm worried about his mental state. I think he needs medication. And he needs medical help.
Well, I think he's just grandstanding, and, you know, he's a rock and roll guy. You know, you can say things in a song that you wouldn't say on a stage, and I think he hasn't figured out how to differentiate between the two. And, you know, he was loving his moment in the sun there with the whole crowd applauding him, which raises the question, too, about the whole crowd that was applauding him. But anyhow, good point. Thank you very much. Demetrius in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Demetrius, what's up? Thanks for listening to AM 760.
Tom, I love listening to you, but I hate how you undermine the battle that we have to face. You guys get the privilege of speaking above the mud, but we have to live in the mud. Ted Nugent can have all the freedom that he wants to say what he wants to say. We need equal approach towards a bully in a system that wants to battle against the unfortunate, but they don't want us to have the same arms they have. They don't want us to have the same power they have. They want to deny us all the freedoms that they can experience and enjoy before we become strong enough to meet them in battle.
Yeah, this is
talk about real issues, Tom.
Yeah, this is why the Republicans right now in the House of Representatives, in fact, they did it last night. They passed the Paul Ryan budget again, only this time. They did this deem thing that the Democrats were going to try and do. And basically what they're going to do now is they're going to start putting together programs. You know, they've got a fund. All funding has to originate in the House of Representatives. They're going to be funding programs like food stamps in ways that are going to immediately throw 3 million people off the rolls.
Can I make one point, please?
Yes, I thought you had.
I expect them to do that. If God found it necessary to leave Satan among saints, we surely can deal with Ted Nugent. That's my perspective.
Okay, thank you for your statement. I think you're dancing really close to the edge, frankly, of Ted Nugent kind of talk. But Joy in Clearfield, Pennsylvania. Hey, Joy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, thank you for your program. It's great. I heard on MSNBC, sorry, but...
That's okay.
That a guy from... a reporter from Texas, okay,
mm-hmm.
called Ted Nugent and ask him about Mitt Romney, and Ted Nugent told the reporter that Mitt Romney called him and asked him for his support. So, therefore, Mr. Romney should be running from him as fast as he can.
Hmm.
And I think Ted Nugent is disgusting. And the people, the one guy I watched him was standing there, and when Ted Nugent was speaking, he was like a zombie, like his head was going up and down, like he agreed with everything he said.
Yeah.
I just think that's sad. Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thanks, Joy, for the call. Sherry in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Sherry, what's up?
Hi. I've been listening to the Ted Nugent thing, and I saw the report earlier on TV with his rant, and I'm baffled as to why he hasn't been arrested by the CIA or the
Secret Service. They're talking to him today, apparently.
But I'm wondering how many days. I mean, he should really. I mean, I know this sounds like 1950s or something, but he really should be questioned at length, if you know what I'm saying, where he can't even leave the room. I mean, he should basically be. I'm not saying incarcerated, but what he's done is so far beyond yelling fire in a theater. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. I'm not yet sure that I agree with it. I think that he has, you know, this is the question that I think we as a society have to grapple with. And that is, on the one hand, we want to have as free a free speech in the United States as possible. And on the other hand, there is a point, there's kind of this middle ground, this bad middle ground, where you can engage in free speech in ways that are harmful to democracy or harmful to America's self-image or harmful to you know reasonable political discourse,
but
not illegal.
But what I'm saying is,
and then the third end is
access to a lot of people that are obviously pretty unbalanced.
Right, and that's my point. And the third end is where you say things that are just plain old flat out illegal.
Obviously, I mean, a lot of the bad people have come out, you know.
No, I got it, Sherry. I got it. Thank you. And this third area is people who are saying things that are plain old flat out illegal. It is illegal to threaten the president. Is it illegal to make a metaphorical threat against the president or to talk about cutting his head off in November? Probably not. Is it a good idea? Definitely not. Is it harmful to the democratic process? Does it make our entire political process more toxic? Does it increase the risk of, you know, I can tell you, I get death threats, right? In fact, we turned one over to the Secret Service just last week. I mean, you know, serious, credible one, or what we thought might be. And this is not the kind of discourse that we need in the United States.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Alexander Furnas is with us. His website, Alexander Furnas, and it's spelled FURNAS.com. He's a contributor to the Atlantic Magazine and website, and has written a fascinating piece on Minority Report Comes to Your Airport. Alexander, welcome. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Nice to be talking with you.
Thank you very much. Let me get this right. The TSA is now going to be, I mean, for a while they've had people standing around looking for people who look suspicious. And actually, you know, I don't have so much of a problem with that, other than the security theater thing in general. But now they're trying to, well, actually, you explain it. You're the expert on this.
Sure. So I certainly agree with you that security theater in general is something we should be concerned about. But yeah, so it's not clear when something like this would be deployed. And it hasn't happened
yet. Let's define what this is first.
Yeah, but so this is
called Fast and Furious, Fast and Not Furious, or what?
Yeah, it's the future attribute screening technology, and it's a technology that is currently being researched by the Department of Homeland Security to use remote sensors. They're going to track, you know, video, track your eye movement, body language, facial expressions, use infrared to get things like body temperature and heart rate. Put all of these things together and say, does this person have malintent? Are they going to commit something? Do they have the signals of someone who's going to commit a terrorist act soon?
Right.
Because they think they can figure that out, and I think they can't. I think it's a problem.
Well, and there's a couple of reasons why this is a problem. There's the obvious one of civil liberties. I mean, do we really want to have our pulse taken before we get on a plane? And, I mean, this is pretty invasive stuff. There's the larger and more rational one, just from a security point of view, that, you know, suicide bombers, the guys who did 9/11, in all probability, and in fact, when you look at the, you know, there's videotape of those guys going through the airport security systems at the time, or at least several of them, the guys who went through in Boston. And they were like cool, calm, and collected. Why? Because they had already made the decision. They were going to lose their lives. They had come to peace with it. In fact, they were proud of it. And so they weren't nervous and shifty-eyed and frightened. They were thought of themselves as like noble warriors. They were marching into their destiny. And just like the guy who's going off to sell, you know, 500 derivatives to the California, pension fund or something, you know. I'm going to go out and make $1 million today. So it's going to pick up the wrong people. It's going to pick up people who have social anxiety.
I think that's exactly right. And it gets at one of, I think, the biggest problem with this technology that they're researching, which is, you know, what we know so far is that it's gotten 70% accuracy, according to a write-up in Nature magazine, in a lab setting. But what does that mean in a lab setting? How do you simulate a positive observation? How do you have a fake terrorist?
You have, right? you hire somebody and you tell them, here's how I want you to behave like a terrorist. And then you look for that behavior, and when you see it 7 out of 10 times, you say, hey, look it, we're successful.
Exactly, and there's no reason to believe that that will map well onto reality.
No.
When this is deployed in a field test. And so they have done the first round of field tests, apparently, although it's in an undisclosed location. We don't know anything about the results yet, as far as I'm aware. But they said it wasn't an airport,
right,
but something that is a reasonable substitute for that sort of operational environment, apparently.
Huh. I mean, well, yeah, and that could be something like people have to go through security to go to a state dinner with the president or something like that. I mean,
maybe. Or a stadium, maybe, something like that, I would imagine.
So are thought crimes, I mean, this, you know, in a way, this is, you know, I mean, I thought that we were innocent until proven guilty. This is... which, you know, obviously the TSA doesn't think that, or not so much the TSA. They're doing their jobs. The idiots who write the legislation, who put this stuff through. But isn't this really a thought crime?
Well, I think it's important to note that we don't actually know what they will use the results of this screening for,
mm-hmm.
Because those types of procedures haven't been made public, and maybe they shouldn't be made public, right? There are certain concerns about making security procedures public because then people can figure out ways to get around
sure.
them. But it's certainly possible to imagine that what they would use results of something like this for would be then pay a little more attention to the people that this flags.
Yeah.
You know, a slightly higher degree of scrutiny. Now, I think there are still civil liberty issues there to be worried about. But no one said yet, and we don't know if it will be, you know, we now have to cavity search you and take you off into a separate room and really make your life hard because you threw up a flag or not, right? So we don't know to what extent it really would violate one of our
Well, and once it's in practice, I mean, these things tend to be incremental, right?
I saw his car
weaving as he went down the road, so I thought maybe he was drunk, and now we've got just random stops, right?
Right.
Breathe into the breathalyzer, please. You know, which I think is unconstitutional. But this is this horrible slippery slope. The other question that always occurs to me when it comes to security, I've flown in and out of a number of countries where over the years where they're heavy, where they have real security problems and they have real terrorism problems. Probably the most famous is Israel. And you know, flying through Israel is no picnic. I mean, you know, I've been challenged, shall we say, by their security people. But it's pretty straightforward stuff. And, you know, the Israelis were the very first to harden their cockpit doors in their airplanes and back in the 70s. And, you know, make it so nobody could, you know, it would virtually take a battering ram to crash in the cockpit door. And when legislation was presented in the United States House and Senate back in the 70s, after about the third or fourth plane was hijacked to Cuba here in the United States, and you got to be kind of old to remember this, but legislation was introduced. The airlines fought it because it would have cost them about $100,000 per plane to harden the cockpit doors. That would have been a one-off expense, but they didn't want to spend the money. And they hired a bunch of lobbyists, and they paid off a bunch of politicians, and they ultimately defeated the legislation. Had the airplane cockpit doors been hardened on United and American Airlines, the airlines that were picked by the 9/11 guys, had they simply hardened their doors like El Al has been forever, 9/11 mm-hmm. wouldn't have happened. Okay, or at least it wouldn't have happened the way it did. And so the question I ask is, you know, is Israel doing this? Because they do, like, common sense stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, and I think, and I'm not an expert on airport security, but what my understanding is that El Al is a very good model of some of the kinds of things that are useful here. And you're right, I think there's no silver bullet, and the world is not perfectly controllable, and we can't predict everything. And searching after that is a rabbit hole we don't want to go down. And so the important thing to do is practical solutions, you know, really well-trained screeners, hardened cockpit doors, those types of proven solutions, I think, will be much more cost-effective
and
people safer.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, the airport security theater does not make me feel safer because, you know, let's keep in mind, 9/11, those guys did that job with box cutters, and you can still get a box cutter blade through airport security right now. Very easily, 100 different ways you can get it through. It's not big enough to set off a metal detector. It could be easily concealed in 1,000 different things, and you can get a plastic handle to put it into if you want some leverage. So number one, we're not protected from exactly what happened on 9/11. But you know, I think even more importantly, it's not the airport theater that makes us safe. It's the other people on the airplane. I mean, they took down a crazy pilot the other day. Remember that?
Yeah.
And they took down a crazy flight attendant. They've taken down a dozen crazy passengers, people who are making threats. It's the passengers now. And I just, frankly, I don't think that passengers on a plane are ever going to let something like 9/11 happen again. Anyhow, Alexander Furnas, you can read all about it, Alexander, FURNAS.com, in the Atlantic. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
When are we going to get rational? When are we going to wake up? When are we going to see that this is, number one, theater, number two, incredibly profitable for the Michael Chertoffs of the world, and number three, turning us into sheep? Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. And sometimes, you know, this was a Mitt Romney was having a clip number nine here, Jacob. Mitt Romney was at a town hall meeting, and one of the people he was speaking with on camera, you know, just an average Joe voter, average voter, said, you know, I did pretty good in public schools. They used to work pretty well. Maybe we should pay more taxes. And Romney just kind of didn't say anything at all. Here it is.
Unfortunately, now, you know, beyond the fat, you're getting the arts programs that are starting to be cut and things of that nature. And I think those are situations, again, where everybody's going to have a seat at the table. There are going to be painful choices all around. But Amanda and I both got public school educations that were top-notch, and we would want our kids to have the same thing. None of us like to pay more taxes, but sometimes that's necessary.
It's a necessary evil.
Right.
Not gonna go there. All right. So, man, I find this Ted Nugent thing apparently has struck a nerve. A lot of people want to talk about it. Cora in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Cora, what's up?
Well, I would suggest that not just that Ted Nugent was threatening our president, but also he's trying to intimidate voters. He was speaking in front of the NRA, who was in collusion with ALEC to pass these laws, which are in 24 states now.
You're talking about the Stand Your Ground, Shoot First laws?
Right. And so, I mean, you know, we have all these African-American men who have been shot, you know, by white men carrying guns. And, I mean, I think it's a veiled threat, you know. I mean, people of color have been, you know, shot, and who's, you know, likely to vote for our president.
Right. Right.
I think it's an intimidation of all sorts, not just against our president.
And the big thing that white people have to get, and I think most don't know, is that African Americans, by and large, understand that the way that our system of justice works, if they are killed by a white person, that white person is much less likely to go to jail or go to jail for life or get the death penalty than if they were to kill a white person. So, in other words, right. You know, the black people tend to live in more fear of whites than the other way around, although most whites don't have any idea of that. And, Cora, thank you very much for the call and for sharing that. And, of course, there's the inevitable right-winger who says, oh, wait a minute, this is the same thing as John Kerry doing a lame attempt at a joke. Steve in Haymarket, Virginia, you want to try that one?
Yeah, it was a lame attempt at a joke, and I think that was the way it was taken, but I just thought it was kind of interesting that at that time nothing was said about his lame attempt at a joke.
Well, actually, a lot was said about that. You're talking about back in 2006, John Kerry was on Bill Maher's show, and he talked about how he was he went to Vermont, and this was just as the New Hampshire primaries were happening or something like that. And actually, I don't have the whole context because I can't find the part of the transcript. All these right-wing sites have the transcript from Kerry making his comment forward, but not what set it up. And so I'm guessing that the setup must have been more benign because I found 8 right-wing sites this afternoon when I was looking for this that all have from the comment forward in the transcript, but none of them have the previous to that. But in any case, what was said, just so everybody knows what we're talking about, is Bill Maher said, you know, John Kerry said he went to Vermont, and Bill Maher said, hey, if you'd gone to New Hampshire, you could have killed 2 birds with 1 stone. And John Kerry, and let me get the language right here. Let me get the exact quote. And John Kerry said, I could have gone to 1600 Pennsylvania and killed the real bird with 1 stone. And everybody laughed. That I would submit to you, A, was in bad taste. B, right-wing radio did go hysterical about that, if you remember. I was on the air at that time, and it was all over right-wing radio. It was all over Fox News. And see, I don't see how John Kerry telling a bad joke, which for which he was criticized, and I don't know if he apologized or not. If he didn't, he certainly should have. It wouldn't surprise me at all, though, if he did. But that is a different thing, Steve, in my humble opinion, than clip number two here, Jacob, or for that matter, clip number three, actually, this saying a bad attempt at a joke on a comedy show is a very different thing than this.
If Barack Obama becomes the president in November again, I will either be dead or in jail by this time next year.
That's a little different, right? That's a lot different, actually. And clip number two, if you have that.
If you take that adamant "we the people" defiance, remember we're Americans because we defied the king. We didn't negotiate and compromise with the king.
Pause that there, Jacob. Wait a minute. We have a king now? Is Ted Nugent saying we were occupied by Great Britain at that time? Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin and George Washington and James Madison. All those guys were like multi-generational North Americaners. They had lived on this continent. Their ancestors had lived on this continent, you know, going back to the 1600s. Now, they, you know, granted, they themselves were occupying land that had been occupied by Native Americans. That's a whole other topic. But to keep to this, those people perceived the British soldiers and British companies as occupying the United States. So we overthrew an occupier. Are you suggesting somehow, Ted Nugent, that a government elected by the people of the United States is the same thing as a foreign nation occupying us, so that we have to rise up and cut off the head of that thing? Play clip two from the beginning again here.
If you take that adamant "we the people" defiance, remember we're Americans because we defied the king. We didn't negotiate and compromise with the king. We defied the emperors. We are patriots. We are Braveheart. We need to ride into that battlefield and chop their heads off in November. Am I any questions?
This kind of bluster from you know, a fellow who chose not to, shall we say, charitably, chose not to join the military when given an opportunity. Let's leave it at that. It's really quite remarkable. But the question for me is, at what point do we call out this kind of talk, not because it's illegal, not because it's in bad taste, but because it's corrosive to the political dialogue in this country? And I think it is.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And that's the point that we've reached. And I think that it gets amplified constantly on Fox So-Called News, Right Wing Talk Radio, and all of Right Wing Blogosphere.
Don't retreat, reload.
Just think about it.
Come on.
Yeah, just think about it. Welcome back. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve. What's up?
Hey. How you doing?
Good.
I think the only reason Ted Nugent's comments can gain any traction is because we don't have instant runoff voting. You know, that's what allows this kind of us versus them mentality to exist in the first place. And I think this is the perfect time for President Obama to take up instant runoff voting as a campaign platform.
I would love to see it. I agree that instant runoff voting is critical if you want to have a functioning democracy. And don't hold your breath for either of the political parties to endorse it. It's something that we have to do at the local level. We need to be, you know, activists about this. Bruce in Katona, New York. Am I saying it right, Bruce?
Yes, you are. How are you, Tom?
I'm fine. What's up?
Listen, a couple things. One is Ted Nugent. One of the comments he said is, and I hope you could play it because I can't remember exactly what he said. He said that Obama's going to turn this a country into a suburb of, and I can't, Indonesia. That's what it was, correct?
I don't have that clip, so I don't know.
Oh, he said that if Obama's reelected, it's going to turn this country into a suburb of Indonesia.
Indonesia, of course, being the country where Barack Obama lived for a year when he was 8 years old, and the or 9 years old, and the Republicans now, there's this Dogs Against Romney site, and everybody knows Mitt Romney tied a sick dog to the roof of his car for 12 hours as he was driving, up to Maine. And so now, apparently Barack Obama in his autobiography said that when he lived in Indonesia, he had eaten dog meat and hated it, among other kinds of meat. He listed some of the kinds of things that he ate that he thought were pretty disgusting. But he was a little kid, and he had to eat what was put in front of him. And so now the Republican talking point is, Obama ate dogs? How could that be worse than Romney strapping one to the roof of his car? Well, Obama was an 8-year-old kid who had no say in the matter. Romney was a 36-year-old adult at the time.
Yeah, but the piece that you're missing, everyone's missing, is that whole Indonesia bit is one of the crux of the whole birther movement. Again, delegitimizing the president. Nobody has picked up on that because the argument is, well, if you went to school there, you have to be an Indonesian citizen, and you can't have dual citizenship with Indonesia and the U.S., none of which is true.
Right.
But before he had to have renounced his citizenship, therefore he's not a citizen. That was a direct, he didn't pick a suburb,
His stepfather was Indonesian and got him into the school. But then his mother divorced his stepfather and went back to Hawaii with him and his sister. And that was the end of that. But yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. That is birther rap. And by the way, Ted, thanks, Bruce, for pointing that out. And Ted Nugent is doubling down on this now. He just came out and he said that he is a black Jew at a KKK rally. Got that? Tony in Trenton, Michigan. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Not so much. Let me change over. Hello.
Yeah.
I live in Michigan, and Ted Nugent, he has his own little game preserve in that.
In Michigan?
Yeah.
Really?
He has 100 acres that he has in Michigan where he hunts game.
He's got an enclosed area where he goes out and kills things.
I know that went there. They said they tagged the animals so they know where they are, so it's easier to hunt them.
Jeez.
And this not only that, I know what I like about Michigan now is that it's stand your ground.
Yeah.
So guess what? I'm afraid of Ted Nugent, what he might do to me.
Tony, you don't want to go there. I'm not even going to let you go there. Jeff in Detroit. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Great show. Yeah. I just wanted to bring you up to date a little bit on the politics in Michigan here. We found the state House of Representatives just ramming stuff down illegally.
Yes.
As Rachel Maddow has
done such a brilliant job of pointing out.
Yes, yes. Did you see the video? Because it's just, you just sit there and watch all of our democracy just crumble.
Yeah.
Every week, schools are going down for the emergency manager. Flint, as well as Benton Harbor. Detroit's just on the very verge of doing it.
Right.
It's just horrible. And I can't believe that people just sit and watch it and don't even speak up about it.
Well, they don't watch it because they don't know what's going on. The media is not covering this well in Michigan. And, you've got mostly fairly corporatist, shall we say, if not conservative, media in Michigan. And the newspapers, virtually all of the talk shows, with the exception of on the station you're listening to right now, WDTW in Detroit, and maybe WTKG, well, not maybe, also WTKG in Grand Rapids. But, that's about it. I mean, there's Sirius Satellite Radio, of course, and Sirius XM and Dish Network and DirecTV that have progressive programming on them. But they're not, dozens, if not hundreds, of radio stations across the state. So I just think it's not being covered, and it should be. It should be a scandal. It should be an absolute screaming scandal.
It really is. You just watch them totally ignore the democratic process. Like I said, the video on Rachel Maddow, you can see it online on her website. They just completely ignore when the Democrats call for a roll call vote. They just totally ignore them, and they need that. Because they
have to prove it's 2/3.
Supermajority.
Yeah, you have to have a supermajority for instant effect. No, I got it, Jeff. Thank you very much for calling and pointing that out again. Diana in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Diana, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Love the show, anyhow. You asked about when are we crossing the line?
Mm-hmm.
My first thought was, I believe Rick Santorum started that with his referring to the president basically as the Antichrist, which is what he did, and arousing what I would call, you know, religious fervor. Now, you have religious fervor coupled with this type of talk from Ted Nugent.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that this points to the fact that as a society, it's not only... Hello?
Yeah.
It's not only our troops that are ill, it's our entire country. Our country needs therapy.
Yeah. We have a national post-traumatic stress disorder from the Bush administration?
Yes, we do. And also, Skittles now come in strange fruit flavors, you know?
Yeah.
I think that as a country that we all, you know, need to do whatever we can about this. And I would also like to point out that last night, our president once again showed us one of the signs of what a decent, thoughtful human being he was in his reaction to the with Ann Romney. He defended Ann Romney, essentially, last night on TV. And I challenge Mitt Romney to defend our president against this type of awful rhetoric.
Yeah, and this is the challenge. Thank you, Diana, for saying that, because that's the challenge that should be out there. Is John Boehner, are you going to repudiate these comments? Mitch McConnell, are you going to repudiate these comments? This is the leader of the House and the Senate, respectively, the Republicans in each. Eric Cantor, are you going to repudiate these kind of comments? Are you? Daryl Issa, you know, you're all about investigating the bad guys out there. If people want to corrupt them, are you going to repudiate these comments? Fox News, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, any of you guys going to repudiate these comments? You know, I'll say, and I have, back in 2006 when John Kerry tried to make a joke on the Bill Maher show about, you know, instead of killing two birds with one stone by going to New Hampshire, he could kill one bird by going to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And George Bush was obviously the resident there. Shouldn't have said that. I repudiate that. So, Limbaugh. You're going to, or actually, I guess the real one to ask is Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, are you going to say that you don't agree with Ted Nugent? You don't want what he said? John in Palm Springs, California. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you? Just two quick comments. One thing we have to realize is that people like Ted Nugent, we have to, you know, pay the price of freedom. I mean, that's...
I am not calling for laws to criminalize what Ted Nugent did.
No,
please don't misunderstand
not.
Me. I am not. In fact, I have said twice in the last hour and a half that I would fight to protect his right to say that.
Likewise. And the second thing is that there's an old saying, but maybe has some reference here. It's a good day when the Ku Klux Klan marches, because then everyone can see what they really are.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. And certainly, you know, back in the day when the ACLU fought to have for the Klan to have the right to march in Skokie, Illinois, through a largely Jewish neighborhood, they were right. And that's a brilliant point, John. Very well said. Thank you very much for saying that. Let's see. Alex in Fort Myers, Florida. Hey, Alex, what's up?
Tom, I learn more from you than watching CNN. God bless you for what you do, sir.
Well, thank you. That's not a very high bar, but I appreciate it.
All right. You know what? I was listening to this when you went to commercial. I said, I want to answer your question. It is the media in this country. It is they're wanting to win, especially conservative media. I think they're far worse than what you do and than what Rachel does and what Chris does and what Keith does. I hope he's back on the airwaves soon. And the fact that Nugent is in this, they love him because he's a right-winger. They don't care about his music.
Yeah.
It's because he's a right-winger, Tom.
Yeah, I know. And he's famous. It's all about the star culture. We have this.
Yeah.
This is the perfect storm of celebrity culture and you know, right-wing chest-thumping nationalistic jingoism. And it's just my point is that it's not healthy for America. I talked last Friday, I think it was, about the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times, and this is corrosive to that. It's corrosive to America and to the principles that this country was founded on. Yes, we want to have strong debate in the United States. Yes, we want to have but talking about the president of the United States and using metaphors like cutting off, not even a metaphor, saying cutting off a head, that's not a metaphor. Saying you should shoot them, that's not a metaphor. Now, associating him with a coyote is a metaphor. Associating him with King George of England is a metaphor. But is that really what you want to say, Ted? That the president's a coyote?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Or that our government has become an alien occupying force? I mean, really? Talk Radio News is up.
But what was I thinking?
It's not Ted Nugent singing that, is it, Jacob? No, it's not. Okay. One of these days, we should play one of his songs, and you can educate me. Alan Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by the way, by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Ellen, what's going on in the world?
Okay, well, Speaker Boehner said that the president had worked out a budget deal but then lost his courage. He said that this morning on television. He said, well, the president said he would that Speaker Boehner said he would increase revenue if they could achieve it without affecting the tax code. Well, okay, I don't know how you do that, but he also said he was willing to increase revenue if there was reform of entitlement programs. Then today at his press briefing today, he said that the
who's the he now you're talking about?
What?
The he that you're talking about, you said
it's Speaker Boehner.
Okay, all right. Pardon my.
He said the president has spent the last 6 months completely shrinking from his responsibility to lead. He said the House was only matching the gimmickry that was coming from the White House, and the president has been AWOL. Then Debbie Wasserman Schultz said, is the goal to return to a time where we were losing 800,000 jobs a month. His brief speakership, she said, will go down as one of the least effective in the nation's history, and that he has been whipsawed by the extreme Tea Party faction of his caucus.
Boy, she nailed that one.
She was right. She was right there. Now, also today, the White House and Congress, et cetera, has been pushing, or at least the Senate Democrats, have been pushing for a renewal of the Violence Against Women Act. The issue is that it was 18 years old, and then it expired, and they did not renew it. And it's interesting because the White House is wanting to expand, as Congress, to some of the definitions of who would be included in this law to include men, because they get abused sometimes,
right,
and the gay and lesbian community, and bisexual and transgender community.
Right. And that's why the Republicans are fighting against it. I understand also that under the Violence Against Women Act, that if you are a woman in this country illegally, then you are protected by that act, and the Republicans object to that as well.
That's exactly it. In fact, Charles Grassley said it's being used to expand immigration. I don't know how that happens, but...
So it's not okay to violently abuse a woman who is a U.S. citizen, but it's just fine to rape and beat a woman who is here from another country illegally.
I guess that's it.
According to Chuck Grassley.
The problem is these women are afraid they're going to be kicked out of the country, so they don't report this kind of abuse.
Right, right. And Chuck Grassley, the Republicans are going to make the situation worse. So the Republicans have succeeded in saying there is a category of women who can be abused. Do I have that right?
I guess that's a good way of putting. I guess they're saying that, and also they're objecting to the fact if you're a non-Native American and you are abusive on Native American property, you can be tried in Native American courts. They don't want that to happen if you're not Native American.
So they don't want to represent the jurisdiction of sovereign tribes.
I guess not. That's right.
That seems like it shouldn't have anything to do with violence against women.
If you commit a crime at on a reservation, why shouldn't you be tried in those tribal courts?
Right. I mean, if you rob somebody, if you shoot somebody, whatever, on tribal land, the tribal court is going to hold you accountable. The tribal police are going to arrest you. However, if you go and rape a Native American woman, or beat her up, the Republicans don't want them to be able to hold you accountable for it.
Exactly.
Bizarre. I just don't understand how these people think they're going to win an election with it. And what really I don't understand is why Romney and Obama are neck and neck with this kind of stuff going on. But
it's very early on. Nobody has seen them at the debates. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it is. So what else is going on?
Okay. As Senator Leahy introduced legislation today, it turns out that when the Supreme Court had this Piva versus Mensing, I think, essentially it says that if you manufacture a generic drug, then you have to put the label on of the drug that originally had the patent. Well, now apparently...
In other words, label it with the same warnings and precautions.
That's right. Yeah. But things often change 17 years later, after a patent expires. And they're also saying the brand name can be held liable for failure to warn, but not the generic drug. So basically, Senator Leahy, Chris Van Hollen, and others are trying to put forth a bill that would allow, and would in fact allow there to be cases against these generic drug manufacturers, particularly if they didn't change the label. And they would also be allowed to change the label to give warnings.
Right. Let me rephrase this, if I may. The Republicans don't, if you get sick or die, or a relative of yours dies, your spouse or whatever, because the drug didn't say do not take this with milk because it will cause you to explode. Bad example, but you get my point.
Right.
If they fail to disclose something on the label and you die, or somebody close to you dies because of it, the Republicans want to make sure that you can't sue the drug company. Is that another way of saying it?
Well, yes, you cannot sue the generic drug company.
Right, the company that manufactured the drug that you bought it from.
Exactly. I mean, that the Supreme Court actually upheld that. But now
the Supreme Court said you could sue the drug company.
No, they're saying you cannot.
Oh.
You couldn't sue the manufacturers of the generic drugs. They could not be held liable under state torts for failure to warn because they have to use this label.
Okay, so the Supreme Court made that ruling based on law, so the Democrats are trying to change the law.
That's right.
So that people will be able to hold drug manufacturers responsible if their bad labeling leads to people being hurt or killed.
Exactly. Or, I mean, for instance, we now know that antidepressants can do things that we didn't know perhaps 17 years
ago. Right, they increase
the
risk of suicide, for example.
That's right. And so why shouldn't a generic company be made to include that in their labeling?
Right. If we say that, you know, cigarettes cause cancer and alcohol can cause birth defects, why not tell the truth about pharmaceuticals? It's mind-boggling. Why would the Republicans? Don't get me started. Ellen Ratner.
There must be a big generic drug lobby. I'd like to look up how much money they've been given.
Yeah, there you go. I think you hit the nail right on the head. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And Lee Fong is on the line with us with Republic Report. A relatively new, super competent investigative journalism bunch. Am I accurately characterizing you guys, Lee?
I think that's too kind, but thank you so much, Tom. We're a new blog, and you know we're investigating how money corrupts democracy.
Yeah, and you're doing a fine job of it. There has been a small, maybe, victory in the Alec... I'm not going to use the word wars because I don't want to do like Ted Nugent. In the effort,
accountability.
Yeah, kind of, that's a fine word. Okay, so what's happened?
Well, the American Legislative Exchange Council, this front group, has existed for some 30 years, but in the last couple of weeks, a lot of activist groups, civil rights groups, watchdog organizations have been calling the organization out and its corporate financiers, and in the last few days, over 10 companies have dropped their membership, everyone from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association to Kraft Foods and McDonald's.
Didn't the company that makes Skittles drop their affiliation?
Yeah, it's mostly consumer brand-conscious companies. So
right.
Mars, Inc., the company that owns Skittles, they didn't want to be associated with, you know, these discriminatory voter ID laws. shoot first laws, these things that any consumer brand would recoil from when associated with. And that's the reason that companies join ALEC, because they hope that they can be anonymous while they pursue a very nasty lobbying agenda. So, of course, when folks call out ALEC and show the world what they're up to, companies with consumer brands are backing away.
Right. Now, it sounds like good news that ALEC is no longer going to be pushing voter ID laws that disenfranchise mostly college students, elderly, the poor, and people who live in cities that have good enough transit systems that they can't, that they don't buy cars, or people who are poor enough they can't afford to buy a car, so don't need a driver's license. It sounds like a good thing that they're going to stop doing that, but those laws are already in place in a whole bunch of states. The shoot first laws are already in place in a whole bunch of states, A, and B, this is going to mean that they've just got that much more time and money to spend doing things like deregulating polluters.
Well, that's a great point, Tom. Even though the new public awareness and these companies dropping their association might seem like a positive step, the sad reality is these laws are already on the books. A lot of them are very fresh. The repeal efforts haven't picked up steam. And in terms of real political terms, I don't see much of a difference being made this year, because there aren't enough legislators out there who are calling for a repeal of these laws, and there's still many well-funded interests pushing them in other states. So although this is a welcome development, what's happened in the last few days, I'm not sure if it'll substantively change the public policy that's already been made.
We're talking with Lee Fong. RepublicReport.com is the website, or .org, excuse me, RepublicReport.org. And Lee, you guys have broken actually several stories, or covered several stories, or both, in the last week that caused my eyebrows to raise. What, in your mind, were some of the more interesting ones or important?
Well, one story that's kind of breaking that we posted last afternoon is concerning Congressman Tim Holden, this Pennsylvania Democrat. He's a blue dog congressman. He's up in a very tight race against a progressive attorney. The election is next week. Well, it's really interesting. This is kind of like a mini money and politics story. 1 month before the election, Congressman Holden introduced a bill that allows agribusiness in the Mid-Atlantic region to dump unlimited amounts of waste and pollution into the Chesapeake Bay. Surprise, surprise, now all of the big agribusiness political action committees are rushing in with 11th hour contributions to save their corrupt congressman. So this is just another example of how members of Congress will peddle corporate interests to save their own careers, but disavowing, or just disregarding, I should say, the public interest.
And this guy's a Democrat.
It's a Democrat.
This really speaks to the corruption of the American political process by the Supreme Court's series of decisions, really since the 70s, and arguably since the mid-19th century, but especially since the 1970s, since Lewis Powell was put on the court, that increasingly assert that corporations have rights of persons, and that money is not property, as we always thought of it, but that it's speech.
Well, there's a silver lining here, at least in this election, maybe not for the big picture, but at least in this election, this particular Democrat voted against the Disclose Act, this legislative package that was supposed to fix some of the problems caused by Citizens United. So now it looks like Holden will lose this primary. We don't know for sure, but there will be one less pro-corporate Democrat in the party if he loses next week.
So this progressive might actually successfully challenge him.
Well, it's a funny story because, you know, although that the progressive might win, it's only because of redistricting. This new seat that Holden has to compete in was gerrymandered so that Republicans overall across the state in Pennsylvania can basically save their own seats in the coming election. So
they carved out a super Democratic district in order to get all the Democrats out of the various Republican districts so that the Republican seats became safe, and therefore that super Democratic district, now the Democrat doesn't feel like he has to be kind of half Republican, although he still is. But, I mean, that district will actually now support a progressive. Am I making sense here?
That's precisely correct. So in one way, the public interest is taking one step forward because this corrupt Blue Dog might lose this election. But in another sense, they're taking two steps backwards because lots of other pro-corporate, pro-big business congressmen are now in safe seats all over Pennsylvania.
You're right, the Republicans. Have there been any efforts in the last century to do away with gerrymandering, to say that congressional districts must have, you know, must be, I forget the word from geometry class, you know, but no more than orthogonal, you know, or hexagonal. I mean,
there have been efforts to use very neutral computer algorithms to, you know, keep communities together, not racially discriminate, that sort of thing. Right. But of course, they've been killed by both parties because, you know, in places like Illinois and California, Democrats have pushed for absolute party hegemony. At the same time, all over the South, Republicans, where they've been, you know, taking state houses and taking the governorship in state after state, they're reaping what they sow. So it's a bipartisan problem.
Well, and these are the kind of things where we the people need to get active. I mean, these are the kinds of issues where I think grassroots activism. And frankly, although I don't know of any Republicans who are speaking out against this, there are progressive Democrats who talk about this.
Yeah, and, you know, back in California, there have been some structural reforms. They had a citizen board that was set up to draw the lines evenly and fairly. At the end of the day, you know, ProPublica, this, you know, investigative outfit, found that a lot of incumbent Democrats astroturfed. They created lots of fake citizen groups to still even manipulate what was supposed to be a neutral citizens commission to draw the lines in a fair way. So it's a very difficult problem to address.
That's unfortunate. You know, it's unfortunate that to some extent, both political parties, you know, to a substantial extent, both political parties basically have to have money in order to function. And we should have a political system that doesn't require money to function. Republic Report is doing a good job of calling out people who are dancing to the tune of money. But we really just need to get the money out of the politics. You know, Bernie Sanders' proposal of publicly funded elections makes a lot of sense to me. Anyhow, Lee Fong.
Thank you.
Yeah, republicreport.org is the website. Lee, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you.
Always good talking with you. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So how far should political speech go in the United States? Should we have rules on it? Coming to terms, starting to learn. This ain't always cracked up to be. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Oh, it's a crazy alert. Maybe. Well, they're not effing around. No, I don't mean it that way. A village in Austria is in the middle of a heated debate over changing its name. Well, why? Well, the village is currently known as Effing Austria. Yeah, that's their name. As you can imagine, such a name comes with a lot of mischief. Effing village street signs are routinely stolen, and teenagers prank call effing residents on a daily basis. But Effing's troubles don't stop there. Naked tourist couples often go to Effing to play in the streets and pose next to the various village signs. So most of the Effing villagers are fed up with all the Effing mischief, and some are taking advantage of it. Local business people have made Effing postcards, Effing Christmas cards, and even Effing beer. Villagers will meet later this week to discuss various name changes, including Fooking and Fugging. Here's hoping a name change will stop all the Effing nonsense. Oh, yeah, Jacob says, how about fracking? There you go. Then they could get some money from the oil companies. Terry and Jake in Georgia. Hey, Terry, what's up?
Hey, you were talking about Ted Nugent, metaphorically speaking. Well, I got a good look at that crowd at the NRA, and I don't think any of those guys know what a metaphor is.
Yeah,
I really don't.
Well, that's my concern, is that, you know, you and I understand that when he's talking about shooting coyotes and putting the president in that context, when he's talking about chopping the heads off of King Louis, whatever it was, 15th, 16th, 14th, I don't know who during the French Revolution, and or for that matter, going after King George that and chop off their heads in November, that he was speaking in metaphor. But there are those people out there. There are the the David Koresh's of the world out there, you know, or the Ted Kaczynski's. Just your neighbor?
Yeah, oh, just geez. All my neighbors and the people that live close to me. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's real.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Okay, Terry, thanks a lot for the call. Glenn in Portland listening on KPOJ. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Glenn,
you got to listen to your radio, your telephone, not your radio. David in Massachusetts. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
Great, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to talk to you about, I think our problem still on the Democratic side is that we're still not getting the message out correctly. There's still a lot of false information. I work with some people that are right-wing Tea Partiers, and the things that they tell me about health care and the emails that they're getting, and you know, that they're going to have to pay more for Medicare once Obamacare kicks in. Right. It's really incredible.
Yeah. No, it really is. There's a very, very methodical, well done, well executed, very. It seems very credible. I get these emails. They look like they're solid. They seem to quote people who make a lot of sense. In fact, sometimes they even seem to make a lot of sense. And they're lies.
And then you ask these people who the Koch brothers are, and they look at you like you have 10 heads. They have no idea who these people are.
Right. Right. This is kind of the division. Well, it's not kind of. This is the division of America. This is the separation of America into liberal and conservative chunks. And I think, frankly, one of the reasons why there are so many people now who call themselves independents is because there's the low information voter phenomena. A lot of people are just 30 years of Reaganomics has hollowed out the core of the American middle class, so people don't have time to follow politics. And secondly, particularly on the right, the rhetoric, and Ted Nugent is an example of this, has gotten so corrosive, so vile that people just say, screw it. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I'm not getting,
And
pox on all our houses.
And I'll let you go quickly. It's amazing when you talk about the Buffett rule with these people. They still have no idea what you're talking about, and they can't make the connection. If the millionaires and billionaires pay a little more in taxes, that's going to hire another teacher. That's right. Going to hire another fireman.
Yeah, and in fact, it's what's amazing is that they will fight to the death to stop $300 million worth of sex ed courses or something like that, saying it's way too much money, it's a waste of money, blah, blah, blah. But food stamps. They want to cut food stamps now. Saving $44 billion or raising $44 billion by raising the taxes on multimillionaires, that's just a drop in the bucket. It's not going to help the deficit.
Yeah, or vilifying the poor. And it's just incredible. But anyways, I don't want to keep you, and I thank you for the work that you're doing, you and some of the others, Ed Schultz, on the progressive radio side. I really enjoy hearing the voice. I like to call it the voice of the truth.
There you go. Well, David, thank you very much for your kind words, and thanks for listening. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, we've got a minute to the break. What's up?
Yes, I just wanted to say, why do we put so much stock in what entertainers say about politics or anything serious? And I know Bill Maher had a program on where he used to...
Politically incorrect.
Yeah, and... It was ended by actually the Bush administration because he said something that was against the Afghan war. And,
yeah, it was ended actually by, I think ABC was a syndicator, but he made the comment that it took courage to fly those planes into those buildings, and that blew up in his face so badly that they took him off TV.
But, I edit those people out. I just think, well, how stupid having a program of entertainers, ill-informed often. I mean, not all entertainers are ill-informed.
Yeah,
but
Bill Maher is definitely very well-informed. But the point, your point about, why are we attending to Ted Nugent is because, why was the right-wing media all over Hillary Rosen last week? It's, at a certain point, these stories become, the story becomes the story, and that's what's happened here.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can drop into our live chat room. It's free. It's fun. It's at TomHartman.com.
Yeah, these justices respect whatever the founders had in mind, except the part about keeping corporations very much in line. They used to be limited partnerships with a very limited reach, but now, by God, they're people with tender feelings and free speech. Thank God for the Supreme Court, modest and high-minded sort, never would rule us from the bench, hit us with a monkey wrench, except when it comes to appointing a president for a democratic nation. We're handing elections over to monster corporations.
Well, Jim Turr there from Blue Canyon Productions. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Sherrod Brown on the line with us. Senator Brown, welcome back to the program.
How you doing? Good to be back. I'm sorry.
Very well, thank you.
I had to unmute because I was talking. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. And
don't do that again.
Very pleased to have you with us, and I'm so glad that you are doing such a brilliant job of serving the people of your state of Ohio. And I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but my understanding is that outside, we played this bumper coming back in, you know, Jim Turr making a joke sort of about the Supreme Court and Citizens United and all this. But Citizens United has created this offspring of these super PACs where anonymous outside donors can just dump enormous amounts of money into state races. And that my understanding is that Ohio, and particularly the Senate races in Ohio, are among the worst in the country for this kind of thing happening.
Yeah, they are. Well, in terms of total money spent, they're spending more in Ohio in my Senate race in the tax than any state in the country. They've spent $5.1 million.
Whoa.
Some of it goes through. I mean, it all seems to be we don't ever – it seems like we've not seen any one organization in at the same time. So there'll be the Chamber of Commerce. Then there'll be a group called Concerned Women of America, which is a strong anti-choice, very conservative women's group. Then there'll be the Karl Rove group itself, and then there'll be this group called 60 Plus, which features Pat Boone, the singer, and they're paid, we think, by the insurance industry. But it's like Karl Rove's directing the orchestra, and he's making sure that each group comes in, but never at the same time, so they don't overlap and coordinate messages. They're probably not allowed to do that all legally, but you know they do. And I mean, this Citizens United is not just open legally floodgates, but it's so emboldened them to spend millions, and they will spend, I got to think that they will spend $500,000-$700,000 every single week in Ohio for the next 35, however many weeks election day is, 35 weeks, and I think they're going to do that around the country. They have so much money. We think it's oil company money. It might be Chinese money that, in terms of outsourcing jobs, it's whatever it wants to be, and it's a real concern for a democracy, as they also, on the other end, as you know, Tom, they're going after voting rights in state after state.
Yeah, I did a semi-tongue-in-cheek thing the other day, a riff on this, pointing out that when Reagan became president, he illegally gave and then sold weapons to the Iranians, and that it could be Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who is given, you know, these two $10 million anonymous donations to Karl Rove to be used to take down President Obama, because get another Republican president, you get more weapons for Iran. I mean, it was a joke, right?
Yeah.
But it's not a joke. I mean, it's not a – I don't think that the Iranians are playing in the game. But the fact of the matter is they could be.
Yeah, I would be shocked if it were that. But I'm rarely shocked anymore and it's surely not a game when they can – you know, the Congress just this week, the Senate – here in the last 3 weeks has voted against taking away oil subsidies to oil companies, voted against a fairer tax on hedge fund managers. They so much of the United States Senate now, the 47 Republicans in the minority, so much of their game, and it's a game to them, I think, in some ways, but it's serious business, so much of what motivates them is protecting the richest people in the country. That's why our whole efforts to repeal Citizens United, to fight against this, however we can, is so important. We have, I would ask your listeners to come to our website, SherrodBrown.com, sign our petition against Citizens United. Senator Sanders is doing similar things. A couple of my colleagues are. When you come to SherrodBrown.com, sign our petition to help us organize the fight against this, because we can't outvote them. We can't get 60 votes in the Senate with 47 Republicans there, but we can out-organize them and put pressure on them and do what we have to do to take our government, our democracy back. Because
yeah.
as we're saying, between Citizens United and rolling back voter voting rights, it really is a serious threat to our democracy, and that's obviously no joke.
Yeah, SherrodBrown.com is the place where you can sign. You can sign the petition to roll back Citizens United. How, Senator Brown, can any genuinely honest politician, and frankly, of any stripe, I mean, I'm old enough to remember Everett Dirksen. I always thought he was an honest politician. You know, there have been, you know, probably Susan Collins, you know, is an honest politician. She's a Republican. I don't know her personally, but left or right, you know, with this kind of corporate influence or billionaire influence or foreign government being laundered through an American front group influence, I'm frankly concerned about the future of our republic.
Yeah. Well, when big money does the bidding, and you know, Congress and both parties have in the past, and as you say, I mean, that the segregationist Democrats from the South that block civil rights is an embarrassment to all of us who are Democrats,
sure.
almost still in many ways. And you know, money's always had too much influence in Congress, always. But it's a whole different level now, and it really is divided between the parties, where the Republican Party, it's really, they want a plutocracy. They want money to kind of make every decision, and that they would stand on the Senate floor and time after time they talk about budget deficits on the one hand, and then they talk about more tax cuts for the rich, and they beat back any effort at any tax fairness or any effort to take away oil company subsidies. I mean, it's just shameful.
Well,
this
is the thing.
And I'm not saying they're dishonest, even, that those elected officials that do that. I just think their view of the world is continually warped by all this.
Well, and we're talking with Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, and SherrodBrown.com, his website. This is the thing that just completely boggles my mind, is that they come out and, I mean, they just last night reconfirmed, you know, in the House of Representatives, the Republicans, yeah, let's have that Paul Ryan budget, you know, let's cut back on food stamps, you know, let's give $3 trillion for the tax breaks to the millionaires and billionaires. And as you point out, you know, let's keep the loopholes for the oil companies. I don't understand how they can win elections on this unless it's just, you know, carpet bombing cities with money.
Yeah, well, it's two things. It's they carpet bomb with money, and then some Democrats don't want to take on the fight. And, you know, yeah. one of the things that happens, Tom, is every time somebody like Bernie Sanders or somebody like Sheldon Whitehouse or Tom Udall or me takes them on and says how important the Buffett rule is, or takes them on and says we ought to take on these oil subsidies and eliminate them, and quit cutting taxes on the rich and taking money away from Head Start or Pell Grants, the Republicans almost always yell class warfare. And Democrats get nervous. I mean, some Democrats get nervous and shrink back. When I hear them accuse us of class warfare, I know that our message is right. I know that you know, we're not committing class warfare. You remember Warren Buffett some years ago said, yeah, there's class warfare in this country, and my class won.
Yeah.
And you look at, I mean, you just got to look, the most amazing statistic I've seen in a couple of years is the 93% of new income generated in the last year went to 1% of the top 1%. 93% of increased wealth income went to 1%. And the top 1%, and you know that the middle class for a decade has seen their wages by and large stagnate, and the top 1 or 2 or 5% have gotten pay increases, significant increases in their wealth, if not pay increases, and so we just want to kind of bring it back to 1990 levels of taxation and fairness, and we know that our country will do best when middle class people thrive, but when the wealthy thrive more and more and the middle class is stagnant, our democracy suffers and we don't do well as a nation.
Yeah, well, and it's good for everybody. I mean, the tax levels under the Clinton administration produced a balanced budget. I mean, you're frankly, you know, you're saying let's go back to those or something like that. I think we should roll back the Reagan tax cuts personally, but and I'm not going to ask you to endorse that position. I realize it's not real popular among anybody right now, but I think that was the first sin. But in any case, it would be nice to see a government to see, and it's refreshing, frankly, to hear you speak candidly and very straightforwardly, much like Bernie Sanders does, about these issues, to see a body politic, a House of Representatives, a Senate, where the majority of the members, rather than a small minority of the members, are willing to speak out and call out the people who are trying to manipulate our political system.
Well, my hope in part is this, Tom, that with an economic populist message that some number of us in the Senate have and will continue, sort of Tammy Baldwin in her Wisconsin race, and,
yep,
and me in my race, and Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, that we win decisive victories this year in my reelection, their election to the Senate, that people who are willing to speak out and not shrink when they accuse us of class warfare, we win significant wins with significant margins. It sends a bit of a message to our colleagues in Washington. You know, you can be a progressive. You can stand up for what you believe in. You can go move forward without compromising on principle. You compromise on legislation, but not on principle. It sends a good message to people, and I'm hopeful that's where we end up in the next 7 months.
I am hopeful, too, and you are one of the shining lights in the United States Senate. Senator Sherrod Brown, sherrodbrown.com, the website, and check it out. Senator Brown, thank you very much for being
here. Thank you for the work you do, Tom. We'll join you again.
Thank you. Great talking with you. We'll be back 45 minutes past the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You know, I don't interview a lot of politicians, but I got to tell you, it takes a lot of courage, a hell of a lot of courage, to be in the position that Senator Brown is in.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
So Lady Jazz 2010 says, Tom, quit inviting strangers into the chat room. Okay, my apologies. Yeah, and then George Franklin says, hey, why don't you write a book on Reagan? I am inclined to, but Tear Down This Myth, and I don't recall the author's name, but the book is called Tear Down This Myth, is like the absolute definitive biography of Reagan. It is absolutely a brilliant piece of work. There are a number of other ones out there as well. Jake in Las Vegas. It's written by Will Bunch. Thank you, Jacob. Jake in Las Vegas. Hey, Jake, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I just wanted to point out a correlation between a couple of years ago in 2000, prior to the 2010 elections, the right wing and or the Republicans put out these photos of the Democratic congressmen in their rifle scopes.
Right.
And who's to say that didn't lead to that or have some influence on the tragedy with Gabby Giffords?
Well, you're exaggerating somewhat. They didn't. It was the Palin campaign, and they didn't the Palin and McCain campaign, and they didn't put out photographs of the members of Congress in crosshairs. They put out a map of the United States with those districts where there were Democrats that they wanted to flip the seats from Democratic to Republican, with a round circle with a crosshairs on it. What looks like a rifle sight. They said they were Christian crosses or something. I don't know.
There weren't photographs of the Congress people?
Not to the best of my knowledge. No, that would be beyond the pale.
All right. I just wanted to point out the correlation between that and the rhetoric of Ted Nugent and how dangerous it could be.
Yeah, I think, you know, Sarah Palin, you've got the lock and load thing, Jacob. This is not how a, thank you for the call, this is not how a candidate for Vice President of the United States should be talking.
Don't retreat, reload.
Yeah, and it's just, it's unseemly, shall we say. But anyway, Ron in Detroit. Hey, Ron, what's on your mind today?
Hey, a couple things. First, that Ron Paul guy was nuts. Second, I continually hear from the right wing that this the Buffett rule is a redistribution of wealth. Why does it why do we let them get away with it? It's never called out that it's not a redistribution of wealth.
Well, I would say that if the top tax rate was 91%, that would be a redistribution of wealth, and I'm in favor of it. At 30%, after you've made your first million, it doesn't even kick in until your second million. At 30%, it's not a redistribution of wealth. It's paying the cost of having a civil society. It is paying dues into it is actually covering the cost of all the infrastructure and all the business that basically, or all the things that allow you to make that $1 million. You know, having an educated workforce, having a transportation infrastructure, having the ability to walk down the street and not get mugged. You know, living in the United States rather than living in the libertarian paradise of Somalia. And so, yeah, I agree with you. But number one, there's nothing wrong with redistributing wealth. I'm sure that clip is going to make it all over right-wing talk radio. And number two, but there isn't. There really isn't. We have always had this as a value in the United States. The George Washington administration. George Washington administration took money out of the federal treasury. Of course, it was tariff money. It was the primary taxes that supported the government. In fact, they entirely supported the government from the George Washington administration right up until the Civil War. But they took tariff money, they took federal money, and used it to pay for a house, for a poorhouse. In fact, a number of them, to feed and clothe and house the poor. It's always been one of our values. The extent to which, you know, these right-wing, oh, it's a Christian nation. Well, okay, if you want to think that, I mean, I think that we were a secular nation at our founding and still are and should be, but if you want to pitch that line, Jesus was all about redistributing wealth. So anyway, I'm sure when they use it, they won't use my whole rant. They'll just take a little piece of it. Jeff in Oracle, Arizona. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Yeah, this is Jess. Hey.
Oh, Jess, I'm sorry.
Hi, Tom. I really enjoy your program. I just saw the interview with Sherrod Brown, and yeah. I did sign Bernie Sanders' petition for it to end Citizens United.
Yeah, and Bernie's got some good stuff over Bernie.org and Sherrod Brown at SherrodBrown.com. I'm amazed that he's the guy they're going after. That more money has over $5 million has been dumped into Ohio against him, and I mean, the election season hasn't really even started yet. They are so committed to taking this guy politically, you know, at the risk of sounding like Ted Nugent, to removing him from office, and you know, with all this money, it's just anyway.
Yeah, and I saw the thing about Paul Ryan's budget plan again, and I just wonder how can we convince the middle-class Republicans that the Republican Party is not doing them any favors.
I think that we need to have honest and candid conversations with our friends, with our neighbors, with our coworkers, and just point out, hey, did you hear about that Paul Ryan budget where, you know, they're going to give $3 trillion in tax cuts to super rich people and they're going to raise the taxes on average working people? Why did Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush run up such a massive debt? You know, the Drudge headline today was Obama, the $5 trillion debt man or something like that. Like this was Obama's idea?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't think so.
The reason he borrowed money was to try to get us out of this mess.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Republicans won't let him. The Republicans set the situation up and then, you know, not... Anyway, Jess, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman program, coming up tomorrow, this Friday marks the second anniversary of the disastrous BP Transocean Halliburton oil catastrophe in the Gulf of Mexico. You think everything's okay just because you're not seeing it in the mainstream media headlines? Think again. We're going to have a conversation with investigative journalist Greg Pallast, who has some new information that will blow your mind. Plus geeky science and all kinds of other cool stuff in the news of the day. Best of the rest of the news, along with your calls. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.